bodies that Brahma and Shiva don't have. You know, if you look in Nectar of Devotion, you'll see there, I think it's chapter 20 or 21 maybe. But Krishna, there's four special qualities Krishna has. Who can tell us one of the special qualities that Krishna has, which even Narayan doesn't have? Just one. Krishna has beautiful pastimes. Well, look, actually, so do all the other. Like Lord Ram, he has very beautiful pastimes. They're very amazing. So what is it about the beautiful pastimes which... No, he has pastimes which are extraordinary beyond the pastimes of any other form of the Lord. Particularly his childhood pastimes. Now we shouldn't misunderstand what this childhood pastimes means. It means his Vrindavan pastimes in total. It does not mean his baby pastimes only. It means his Vrindavan pastimes. All of them. And actually particularly the Rasa dance. Yeah. His childhood pastimes means as a young fellow up to the time of being a youth, which is still childhood. Yeah. So particularly his childhood pastimes means his Vrindavan pastimes. And men, can you, one man, tell us? And it's the flute. So do many other people. Ian Anderson used to play the flute. You probably never heard of him, which is probably good. But Krishna plays the flute like no one else can play the flute. That's the thing. We talked about Krishna playing the flute. And that is just something most amazing. Totally unique. There's only one, Krishna. He can do like that. And Mataji's, can you tell us a third special quality of Krishna? Yes? Well, he's also attractive to all men and all species. So the thing is, he has a standard of beauty which cannot be found in anyone else, even Lord Narayan or any other of his personal expansions, what to speak of people like us. Yes, his beauty is incomparable, totally incomparable, including to women and to men. When men would see Krishna, sometimes they would faint. Sometimes when Krishna would see himself in a mirror, he would become bewildered completely and hanker to become a gopi. So therefore he appeared as Lord Chaitanya. And how many have we given now? We've four, three, right? So what's the fourth? Mother Vishakapriya. Yes. He is surrounded by devotees who possess a standard of love of God not found in the devotees of any other form of the Lord. Yes. His devotees in Vrindavan, the love of God they have is completely incomparable. So those are the four which make Krishna outstanding, even from other four forms of himself. Then there's various others which his Vishnu forms have, which make them outstanding from Brahma and Shiva. And there's this type of hierarchy there. But you can look in Nectar of Devotion if you want the details. As spoken of in the Nectar of Devotion, is the Shiva on Mount Kailash, who's a demigod within this universe. Yeah. Sadashiva Loka, Mahesh Dham, Kailash, Mahakala Dham. These are the four parts of Shiva Loka. Yeah, the greater abode of Lord Shiva. Okay. Well, for tomorrow, let's see. You could read through the remaining few verses from this section and then go on. We are going to attempt to get up to about text 55 tomorrow, if we can. Prabhupada Ki Jai. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We had yesterday got up to about text 48, I think, or so, having been through Devi Dham, Mahesh Dham, Hari Dham. We talked a bit about Sheshanag, text 47. He is providing the accommodating feature of the material nature, the all-accommodating potency. In this way, he is continuing to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even though he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he is a form of Lord Govinda. Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Then let us recite responsively text 48. Yasyai Kanishvasita Kalam Atavalambya. Jivanti Loma Vilaja Jagadandanata. Vishnur Mahansa Iha Yasya Kala Vishesho. Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Brahma and other lords of the mundane worlds, appearing from the pores of here of Mahavishnu, remain alive as long as the duration of one exhalation of the latter, Mahavishnu. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, of whose subjective personality, Mahavishnu, is the portion of portion. Here, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta makes a very brief comment. The supreme majesty of the subjective nature of Vishnu is shown here. Well, of course, the supreme majesty of Lord Govinda is shown here, and of course Mahavishnu, his majesty, is also shown. That Lord Brahma, he's so great, he lives for 311,040,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,
practically he's eternal. And he's so powerful, we may struggle to create some small thing, some very intelligent and enterprising and powerful person may create an empire for a few years on this planet. But Lord Brahma can create the entire universe, and it's always totally under his control. So what a person Lord Brahma is, he's so great. But that period of time, his whole lifetime, 311 trillion of our years, such a long time, and so many things happen, and it's all under Lord Brahma, and he's got it completely under control. But in terms of Mahavishnu, it's the period of time of his one exhalation and inhalation. Just think, if there is some little insect in front of you and you exhale and inhale, and that's his entire lifetime finished. He did everything in that period. He was born. He grew up. He went to school. He got married. He had a family and worked hard and then retired and then got old and then died. In that time that we exhaled and then inhaled. So he did all those things. How significant would we think that creature was? Not very significant. But that is Lord Brahma. That is Lord Brahma. So what to speak of us? We are rather pathetic little creatures. Srila Prabhupada, somewhere, I think it's in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, refers to us as forgotten souls. Just, you know, don't worry about them, forget them. Yeah. So what about us? If Lord Brahma is that insignificant compared to Mahavishnu, then what about us? We are practically out of the reckoning altogether. We really don't count. But then, Vishnur Mahan Saiha Yasya Kalavishesho. That Mahavishnu is a part of a part of Krishna. Govindam Adipurusham Tamaham Vajami. So in this way, the supreme majesty of the subjective nature of Vishnu is shown, and even more so, the supreme majesty of Govinda, the original Adipurush, is shown there very vividly. So then Lord Brahma goes on in text 49 to talk about himself, or those who are in the post of Brahma, what it means to be in the post of Brahma. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, from whom the separated subjective portion Brahma receives his power for the regulation of the mundane world, just as the sun manifests some portion of his own light in all the effulgent gems that bear the names of Suryakanta. So there is a gem called Suryakanta, and somehow or other it stores the power of the sun, something like that. Little bit of the power of the sun. And so in this way it can burn something, perhaps, because it's stored a little bit of the power of the sun. Just like some days when it's really hot, if you take a black piece of rock, flat rock, and put it in the sun, if it's really hot, by that I mean if it gets up to about 50 and it's a very bright sunny day, so you leave that rock in the sun for some hours, then you may be able to cook a chapati on it or something like that. You can certainly burn yourself. Yes, in some places in New Zealand where I'm from, they have some beaches which have black sand. It's completely black. And when it's a hot day and you walk on that sand, then you can get blisters on your feet. I mean, you can't even walk. You can hardly run. I mean, it's just too much, the heat. So the thing is that the sun is imparting its potency to different things, like the Suryakanta gem, or like some item you may place in the sun. But the difference between the potency of the actual sun and the amount of that potency which is imparted to that object, even though that object may reflect the potency of the sun quite noticeably by our standards, but compared to the sun, it's nothing. So like that, Brahma is saying that all the Brahmas receive their power for regulating the universe from Krishna. It's not their own independent power. They receive that power from Krishna, but it's a tiny, tiny little part of the actual power that Krishna has. Just like Krishna says at the end of the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, by a single fragment of myself, I maintain and sustain the entire creation. So this is the principle involved here. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta in the purport discusses, in terms of something we were talking about briefly yesterday, how by, this is in the middle of the purport, by principle Brahma is superior to ordinary jivas, but is not the direct divinity. The divine nature is present in a greater measure in Shambhu than in Brahma. So Lord Shiva is higher than Lord Brahma. The fundamental significance of the above is that the aggregate of 50 attributes belonging to the jivas are present in a fuller measure in Brahma, who possesses in a lesser degree 5 more attributes, which are not found in jivas, but in Shambhu. Both the 50 attributes of the jivas, as well as the 5 additional attributes found in Brahma, are present in an even greater degree than in Brahma. So I just looked up those different attributes. I thought we could just mention them. So all living entities have the first 50. Of course, the jivas have in a minute degree, and Krishna has completely. Brahma and Shiva partially have 5 more. Partially, they have 5 more. Changeless, all cognizant, ever fresh, Satchit Ananda body, and all mystic powers. But partially, they're partially changeless, partially all cognizant, partially ever fresh, they partially have Satchit Ananda Vigraha, Satchit Ananda bodies, and they partially have all mystic power. Not on the same level as Krishna, not even as Lord Narayan. Then Lord Narayan has another 5. He has inconceivable potency. Uncountable universes come from his body. He is the original source of all incarnations. He is the giver of salvation to the demons he kills. And he can attract liberated souls. So these are special characteristics possessed by these special persons. And Brahma is actually so special that at the beginning of the purport, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta makes the point that generally Lord Brahma is a jiva, some eligible jiva. But sometimes there is no eligible jiva. So then Krishna incarnates, an avatar appears and takes the position of Lord Brahma. So this position of being Brahma is very important. But anyway, one way or the other, his power, his extreme power, is just a little reflection or just a little particle of the power of Krishna. Then next is Ganesh.
I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, whose lotus feet are always held by Ganesh, upon the pier of Tumulai, protruding from his elephant head, in order to obtain power for his function of destroying all the obstacles on the path of progress of the three worlds. So he, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta says, he is amongst the five gods who are particularly important for helping conditioned souls, I mean, on the material level. Those five are Vishnu, Ganesh, Shiva, Durga, and Surya. And they're actually going to be mentioned again in a couple of verses. So they're called, well, the worship of them is called Panch Upasana. And they are particularly prominent deities within the material world. Ganesh, Shiva, Durga, Surya, and Vishnu. And Ganesh, his particular function, he's very important because he removes obstacles. You may recall that in Nectar of Devotion, there is one principle in chapter 6, is it? I think it's chapter 6, which describes 64 things that we're meant to do in devotional service. So one of them is we're meant to worship Ganesh. At least that's what Rupa Goswami said. Anyway, Srila Prabhupada never instituted that. Otherwise, we would be doing it today. And I've never heard of anyone doing it, in ISKCON at least. But I've definitely heard of people asking Prabhupada if they could, and if they could, how would they do it? And Prabhupada responded that it's very difficult. Don't get into it. It's very, very difficult. It's so difficult and demanding, and it has to be done under the strict supervision of the spiritual master, and so on and so forth. And the devotee wrote back and said, well, you know, I might like to have a go, so can you tell me what are the requirements? And Prabhupada wrote again and said, yes, first thing is you need to give Dakshin, Guru Dakshin, minimum $100,000 a month. In other words, this is quite a big thing we're thinking of getting involved in here. So we don't do it. And an interesting point is, and actually it's a very essential point, is that Ganesh is holding the lotus feet of the Lord on his head, and in that way he's getting the potency to remove the obstacles. It's not that he's independently powerful and he doesn't see himself as such. And actually what Ganesh is doing, he is always chanting mantras to and performing puja to Lord Nrisingadev. Ganesh is a great devotee of Lord Nrisingadev. And here where it says that he's always holding the lotus feet of Lord Govinda on his head in order to get that power to remove the obstacles. In specific terms, we understand that this is indicating Lord Nrisingadev. This is really referring to Lord Nrisingadev, that particular form of Lord Govinda. So if we want obstacles to be removed, if we would like to get this facility which Ganesh is offering, then really all we have to do is worship Lord Nrisingadev. And that is like the direct approach. And we're doing that. So in this way, what is being described here in text 50, or the benefits being described, are obtained by the devotees. All his glory rests entirely on the grace of Govinda, or Lord Nrisingadev. Then text 51. The three worlds are composed of the nine elements, fire, earth, ether, water, air, direction, time, soul, and mind. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, from whom they originate, in whom they exist, and into whom they enter at the time of the universal cataclysm. Anyway, I think that's fairly clear. the elements, whatever there is within the material world, there are different ways of looking at it. Here, it's being looked at in 9 features. If you look in the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where is it? Is it verses 6 and 7, I think? 6 and 7. There's a little bit different way of looking at the same thing. All the ingredients which make up the material nature. There's a list, I think it's 24, if I'm not mistaken, ingredients, including the senses, different types of senses. There are different ways of looking at the makeup of the material nature, but the bottom line, as expressed here, is that it's all coming from Lord Govinda, and it's all originating in him. It's all being sustained by him when it's manifest, and when everything is withdrawn, it's all going back into him. So he is the ultimate factor within the material nature, or behind the material nature. Text 52 is discussing the last of these 5 deities, these 5 important gods. Vishnu, Ganesh, Durga, Surya, and Shiva. They've all been discussed now. In other words, these 5 are very important. So now the sun god in text 52 is being briefly described. The sun, who's the king of all the planets, full of infinite effulgence, the image of the good soul, is as the eye of this world. I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, in pursuance of whose order the sun performs his journey, mounting the wheel of time. The sun is sometimes taken to be, different people have different views on the demigods. Some look on Durga as being supreme, some look on Shiva as being supreme, and some look on the sun or the sun god as being supreme. And indeed, sometimes he's referred to as Surya Narayan. He's a specially empowered personality. He's very, very, very important. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta in the purport, he explains why some people think that the sun is uniquely important. He says, certain professors of the Vedic religion worship the sun as Brahman, or in other words, as the supreme. The sun is one of the hierarchy of the 5 gods. We mentioned that. Some people target in heat the source of this world, and therefore designate the sun, the only location of heat, as the root cause of this world. If the sun were to be turned off today, and from now on there were to be no sun, we would all die before long, and all living entities would die. That would be that. Because everything, all life on the material level, is being sustained by the sun through photosynthesis. All the plants and so on are able to develop. That's from the sun. So if the sun was withdrawn, all the plants would die, all the animals would die, all the humans would die. So therefore some people take it that the sun is supreme. However, the sun is getting his potency from Govinda. Not only is he getting his potency from, but he's acting under the order of Govinda. There are verses in the Upanishads or the 4 Vedas saying that out of the fear of Lord Narayan, the wind is blowing, the sun is shining, the planets are staying in their orbits. So all of these things, including the sun, are dependent on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But the sun is particularly important. There is a practice, I believe, in India. Those of you who are from India could correct me if I'm wrong. That if someone has some serious disease and they cannot be cured by, they have not been cured so far by whatever medical attention it was possible to give them. And then the doctors run out of, you know, possible solutions and they give up. Then there is an approach, I have been told, of just putting the person in the sun. Have you heard of that? If all else fails, put him in the sun. Because